This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Since 1979, TireRack.com has been helping people find the right tires for how, what, and where they drive. They sell only the best, like the full line of Yokohama tires. Test results, ratings, and reviews are there to assist. Or try the Tire Decision Guide to get a personalized tire recommendation. Tires ship fast and free to you or to one of over 10,000 recommended installers. In many areas, they offer mobile tire installation. Shop Yokohama tires at TireRack.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, I'm Natalia Shpilova-Said, and I'm host of New Books in Literary Studies, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. I'm delighted to speak today with Diana Steven about her book Lilacs in the Dust Bowl, which was published by Peregrine Publishing in 2021. Diana Steven is the author of Sunflowers Under Fire, historical fiction, and a finalist for the 2019 Whistler Independent Book Award. Diana Steven is also the author of A Cry from the Deep, The Blue Nightgown, and The Rubber Fence. Her varied background includes work as a clinical social worker, teacher, professional actor, and freelance writer-broadcaster for sports journal CBC Television. And Diana also writes poetry. Hello, Diana. Thank you for joining me today, and congratulations on the release of your new book, Lilacs in the Dust Bowl, which took place just a week ago.
Thank you so much, Natalia, for having me. I appreciate that.
So, Lilacs in the Dust Bowl is based on your previous novel, Sunflowers Under Fire, which narrates the story of Lucia Mazurets and her family. In Sunflowers, you share with the readers that the novel is based on the story of your own family. What's the story that you decided to share?
Well, I started writing Sunflowers Under Fire, which takes place in Russia during the Great War and the Bolshevik Revolution and the typhus epidemic that followed, and life in the refugee camp, and then in Polish-occupied Ukraine. And I decided to write that because my granddaughter thought I should make it into a book after I shared some of the family anecdotes with her. My mother always thought it would make a good story, but I never thought of writing it. And then when my book came out and readers would talk to me about it and say they enjoyed reading it, but what happens to Lucia next? That was why I ended up writing Lilacs in the Dust Bowl. There were a lot of readers that wanted to know more about Lucia's story and what happened to her after she left the old country. So, yes, and it's, as you mentioned, it's biographical fiction, historical fiction. And because I had my mother's anecdotes, but there were a lot of blanks in her story, and I needed to, you know, expand upon that. So I did a lot of research to fill in the blanks.
And there are a lot of themes in both Sunflowers and Lilacs, historical, political, and cultural. And of course, like you mentioned, there is this layer of biographical story. For this reason, the novel reminds of family sagas that cover an extensive period of time and at the same time present the changes and challenges through which the characters have to go through. But when we think about Lucia, what was that starting point that you would like to depart from, let's say? Was it historical? Was it political? Was it cultural? What's the emphasis that you would like to put in this story?
I think basically all of it, and showing a woman who was not educated, hardworking, smart, very resourceful. On her own, I think she showed the independent spirit and the strength and the love of family that so many people like in Ukraine have, and in other places too, in other countries, that these are women who have not been heralded because they're not famous. They haven't, you know, made their mark in the news in that way, but they have, and I want to show all of that, and also those cultural influences, how the songs and the I guess the history informed them that they had to keep going, and also their faith. My Baba, Lucia Mazurets, was a very religious woman, and I think if she didn't have her faith, she would not have survived that time. Mm-hmm. You know, she lost children, you know, loses her husband, gets typhus herself. To me, it was extraordinary. And what surprised me mostly is that I had shared a bedroom with Baba for the first 15 years of my life. And she never talked about what happened in the old country and what happened when she came to Canada. But, you know, she arrived, lilacs in the Dust Bowl. She arrives just before the stock market crashes and the Great Depression begins. So my first book, Sunflowers Under Fire, could have been called the Oi, Oi, Oi book. And this one was like out of the frying pan into the fire, the next book, because she had hoped to escape, you know, all that turmoil. And here she comes to Canada with the promise of better land, lots of land for her growing family. And what she discovers is not what she thought it would be. And here she is, you know, away from everything she knows, doesn't know the language, had to leave her mother behind, her brothers behind. You know, unlike today, you know, we're in this pandemic and we have the internet. Like I'm talking to you now, it's beautiful. I can see you, Natalia. But she never saw her mother again. She never heard her voice again. And so that sacrifice, that bravery, I wanted to portray all of that. You know, I wanted to. And what has made me feel so good is just not people of our background, you know, that are enjoying the story. Others are saying, you know, from other ethnic backgrounds, they're saying, oh, my grandmother was a woman like that. And so speaking to, I think, to that group of women, basically, who sacrificed so much for their families, for the love of their families. And even though, you know, there was all this political mayhem going on, like, in, you know, changing governments, civil wars in the old country, and then coming here even, you know, the politicians didn't know how to handle, you know, the growing unemployment, et cetera, the ravaged farms. Yeah, somehow they managed, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is a lot of historical background in the first book and the second book. And you mentioned that time period when Ukrainian part was under the influence of the Poles and of the Russians. You mentioned the advancement of the Bolsheviks. And there is this Lucia, and there is her family in the midst of everything. And somehow all that political and historical turmoil somehow shapes their lives as well. So I'm thinking about this position of the individual in the midst of some historical change. So what was the message here, right? When you position your characters in the midst of very dramatic and drastic political changes, historical changes, somehow they do respond to those. Lucia makes comments about what changes are going on in not in the western part of Ukraine, but in the eastern or in the central parts of Ukraine. And somehow she knows what's going on, and there is some response to that. And she is thinking about the fate of Ukraine as well, because there is this always under message about Ukraine being independent and how Lukia is also hoping for independent Ukraine. So how did you construct this relationship, let's say, between the individual and history?
Well, I think because my grandfather, you know, her husband, Gregory, he fought for the Tsar. And it was a very, as we know through history, the Russian soldiers were not well equipped. You know, there was considerable losses. And then following that with the Bolshevik Revolution and the turmoil in the country, and you had so many different armies fighting, I think there was a feeling that, you know, the people you can trust the most is your family. To get you through, and so that reliance on one another, I think, just deepened, and also suspicious. They became more suspicious, and trust factor, mm-hmm. you know, was affected significantly. Even, you know, coming to Canada, but at the same time, I remember my Baba when I was a teenager, and she was sick, and it was time to vote in our federal elections in Canada. And my mother said, you know, Mama, stay home. And my Baba said, what? They don't need my vote. And so she went, even though she was sick. And so she understood at, you know, a very basic level in some ways, which is the most important level, is that you have a voice and you need to speak up. But I think that when, I wrote about it in Sunflowers Under Fire, yeah, there were some choices that they had to make where, you know, my grandfather was asked to fight in a different army and he said, no, he'd had enough, you know, because he saw that, you know, war didn't solve everything. I mean, and so many lives were lost and people came back maimed and, you know, so, yeah, so they learned to rely on themselves.
Mm-hmm. And the novel gives a very good understanding of Ukrainian customs and traditions, Ukrainian food as well, relationships in Ukrainian families as well. And you always specify that you are talking about customs and traditions which are Ukrainian, or food which is Ukrainian, or family which is Ukrainian. There are references to Russians, there are references to other ethnicities, but Ukrainians in this novel are portrayed as distinct. They have their own history, they have their own story to tell, they have their own customs and traditions and food. And as you just shared, I assume that partially this information comes from your own family. And I'm wondering, how else did you collect and choose this material that you included in the novel?
Well, as you say, I got a lot from my own family. I was born in Winnipeg, Manitoba, but my first language was Ukrainian because Baba was living with us and she didn't speak English. And my mother was a fabulous cook and a baker and all those foods that, you know, are familiar to Ukrainians, the borscht and the Varaniki and the Holovchi and studenets and all of that was, you know, just everyday food. So I, you know, of course, incorporated that into my novel. I'm sorry, Natalia, I lost the thread of your question. So what was the last part you mentioned?
So you mentioned that you were also using some historical background.
Yes.
For the creation of the novel.
I read, I went to every library I could find to look at material for Ukrainian history, folklore, everything that I could find that maybe could just enrich my work. And I went to the Winnipeg Public Library, Toronto, New York City Library. I even went to the one in Stamford, Connecticut, and looking through books on Ukrainian history, on everything I could find during that period in Sunflowers Under Fire between 1915 and 1929. Mm-hmm. And then similarly for Lilacs in the Dust Bowl, I also looked at the books on the Great Depression and looked at archives and went on the internet and found historical information about farming, mm-hmm. the farming methods that were that our pioneers, the Ukrainian pioneers, used when they came to Canada. So I love research, so that wasn't a burden. I enjoyed that.
And what part was easier for you to write in terms of this reconstruction of historical background, the first or the second? I mean, sunflowers or lilacs?
It's interesting. I think, it's hard to say because Sunflowers Under Fire took about 7 years to write. Lilacs in the Dust Bowl was less than two, but then that was because of COVID. Mm-hmm. You know, I wasn't traveling the way I tend to travel, you know, to see family, and my husband and I like to go to different places. You know, so it's hard to say. They both required a lot of research. I had a timeline, you know, sheet for every year and what political events were happening and everything I was mapping out. And as I said, I read a lot of books, nonfiction and fiction. For Lilacs in the Dust Bowl. Mm-hmm. But I don't know which one. I don't know.
And the titles are just wonderful. Sunflowers Undefined, Lilacs in the Dust Bowl. Where do these come from?
Well, Sunflowers Under Fire, I guess because sunflowers is the national flower of Ukraine. And I found this on a young Ukrainian girl's website. Mm-hmm. I did not know that sunflowers was a national flower, and it just it spoke to me. And the cover of the book, right here, you see that, that is a family member mm-hmm. in the book. And so I'm working with a wonderful book cover designer who put this all together. I had him do the Ukrainian little corners on the the embroidery types and the cottage, and the same with lilacs and the Dust Bowl. This is a picture of my father holding lilacs. And so this is the beginning of my mother and father's love story is in lilacs. And I've actually started working on the third book of the series.
Oh, wow.
And that one, I've already got a title for that one. That's called Paper Roses on Stony Mount.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yes, and because paper roses has something to do with their relationship. Mm-hmm. But, so lilacs and the Dust Bowl, and of course Dust Bowl is, what happened on the prairies in Canada and in the USA. They called it a Dust Bowl because it destroyed the farms, these dust storms. Mm-hmm. So that's how lilacs came in, because my father's holding this bouquet of lilacs.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Is it time to change your approach and switch to Air Supra Albuterol Budesonide? Now you can virtually connect with a doctor to discuss your options and see if it's time to make a change. If appropriate, you may even be able to get a prescription for Air Supra the same day. Talk to a doctor today and see if Air Supra is right for you. Visit airsupraconnect.com to connect with a provider.
I would like to go back to a comment that you already made about Lucia and her losses in life. And you mentioned that all she had to survive through these losses was her faith and her trust. But Lucia's nature, right? Lucia's character is quite complex. She has to somehow negotiate these losses with herself, because she has this relationship with God, but she also has some sort of, not fear, but uncertainty, right? Where her life goes and where her family goes. And yes, she has her family to rely on, but those family relationships are quite complex as well. And there are arguments in the family, and she takes it very close to her heart. And again, she hopes that everything will be fine, but still, I wouldn't say that her religion or her faith are somehow subverted or undermined, but still there is this kind of, you know, this moment when she doesn't know anymore whether she will be taken care of.
Uh-huh. No, it's true. And I think, yes, and it's hard to know where that comes from. But, you know, her inner strengths, as I mentioned, she never talked about what happened in the old country. Mm-hmm. I mean, here. And how I found out was my mother was a natural storyteller. Mm-hmm. Mother was the talker in the family, not my Baba Lucia. I just, it's interesting. I was a family therapist for 25 mm-hmm. years. So one of the things I remember her sitting on the table in her senior years trying to lose weight. And I think that when I think about the fact that she had gained weight was frustrating for her, but I think that was almost like a protective barrier mm-hmm. in some way, a way of finding some kind of nurturing herself through food, you know, to give herself some comfort. Mm-hmm. And say what comfort of food mm-hmm. is, because, well, there's a lot of pain. And maybe she didn't talk about things because it was just too painful to bring up. So she learned how to just bury it. Just bury it. Like soldiers, when they come back from war, they don't bring up what they've experienced because they don't want to relive the trauma, you know, and it's, once you start going there, it's a dark place. But she wasn't an unhappy person, but she just, resilience, like you say, it wasn't all faith. It was probably her personality, her inner strength, and her wisdom. Mm-hmm. She was, even though, as I say, she was uneducated, she was a very smart woman. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you mentioned that she was uneducated and she didn't know English, but she knew many other languages, and it's not only one or two.
Yes, she did. Yes, she absolutely did. And I think, you know, she probably could have, even in her, like, you know, not long before she died, she was still trying to learn some English and asking me to teach her some, but she never had to speak it anywhere because she wasn't in her final years. She wasn't going anywhere. And when they immigrated to Canada, like many immigrant families, they stick with their own. So they speak their own language, and not having to go and work in the public, mm-hmm. you know, as much, then they, you know, don't require it. It wasn't a need. You know, if there had been a need, I'm sure she would have learned it. Mm-hmm. She spoke Yiddish and Polish, and she knew some Czech and some Russian, mm-hmm. A little bit of German.
Yes, so we started talking about Canada. Sunflowers Under Fire narrates the story about Lucia when she and her family still live in Ukraine. But then Lilacs in the Dust Bowl, it's her story when they decide to immigrate to Canada. And of course, they find themselves in a very alien, foreign environment, and they somehow have to find their way there, and they do to some extent. However, they also have to go through some hardships and through this sense of not knowing. However, they somehow persevered. So what's the main line here when she goes to Canada? What would you like to emphasize in this part of the story?
A lot of hope. A lot of hope for a better life. Her family was expanding. Her eldest son already had a child. And she saw that writing was on the wall. The other three children would probably find, you know, mates. And at that time in Polish-occupied Ukraine, they weren't allowed to expand their land. They mm-hmm. were limited. And so when she heard on the streets of Lutsk that there was this wonderful offer in Canada of land, well, first of all, she thought to go to America. But America's borders were closed at that time. Mm-hmm. They weren't allowing any new immigrants. So, you know, they chose Canada. And, mm-hmm. Yes, a lot of hope. Mm-hmm. But you know, when you think about it, you know, she was in her early 50s,
right?
Mm-hmm. And she came and a widow on her own with you know, a family and incredible courage, and you know, to go when you don't know where you're going. So a lot of hope. And a belief, I guess, in this promise of land. I mean, at that time, people were also going to Argentina. You know, that was also another from you know, Polish-occupied Ukraine. Yeah, a lot of hope. Mm-hmm. Just, I think, and you know, a dream of a better life, right? Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is mentioned in the book that there is this one fragment where it is mentioned that she somehow was comparing Canada and America. Yeah, we're not in America because in America they have much more money than they do here in Canada. So I was wondering where that kind of comment comes from. And right now you just explained that your Baba, right, they wanted to, they wanted to go to the States first, not to Canada.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, but then it just happened that they immigrated to Canada. But still, when they immigrate to Canada, they are trying to find some Ukrainian communities. Is that something that your Baba was doing as well?
Absolutely. And when they arrived, I mean, there were lots of, you know, it was a second wave. It was a second wave of Ukrainians coming to Canada. First wave was around the turn of the century. And they were in the second wave, which was a problem because then all the good land had been already taken up. So when they arrived, you know, it was it wasn't quite what they thought it would be like. I mean, the pickings weren't there anymore. So yeah, that was a hardship. That right from the start.
And that's interesting how Lukia is drawn to this idea of her own land. That's what they had in Ukraine, and it was very important for her to have that piece of her own land in Canada as well.
I think that's, that thing is very common. There's a wonderful film called Zemlya, right? A Ukrainian film called Zemlya, Land. So land is... Yes, because then you're your own master. There's a history, right, of serfdom in Ukraine. I mean, Tarasa Shevchenko's poetry speaks to all of that. So very much so. Then you know you're your own boss in a way. Everything depends on you, and you depend on it. And I'm so happy today that we are gaining new respect for farmers. I think that, they are an overlooked occupation many times because they have, well, it's our food, right? It's our food. Without food, where would we all be? And they had that knowledge, that understanding of, crop rotation and all that. I mean, that's, there's a science to it and an art to it, which, they just knew their plants and what to do, and they,
I would like you to talk a little bit more about how Lukia finds her way in this new country. She leaves her country, she leaves her home, and she abandons something, right? And she loses something. But then she comes to Canada and she gains something as well. There are episodes where Lukia thinks about the country that she left, and then she had some doubts if she made the right choice. As we said, during these episodes of uncertainty, she thinks about her family with hopes that eventually, after all these hardships will be over. What is it that she gains when she comes to Canada?
Well, she gains living in a country that isn't threatened by war constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And she gains by having her children at home, because when she left Polish-occupied Ukraine, there was a threat that her son, Mikhailo, would be drafted into the Polish army. And she had already lost some children. She didn't want to lose another, you know, with war and the Bolsheviks were threatening. So she gains peace of mind that way. And when she arrives in Winnipeg, Manitoba, there is a large Ukrainian community already established right. from before. Manitoba, Saskatchewan, Alberta, those three provinces had a lot of Ukrainian immigrants. So, and there were Ukrainian agents that helped with finding farms. So there were people who spoke her language, and she was able to find there were churches already. There was Ukrainian Catholic and Ukrainian Orthodox churches already built. There were people that she could draw on, and again, a priest that she could draw on for, you know, familiar. In fact, in the church that I went to, one that my Baba went to in Winnipeg, we sang Shtenev Madala Ukraina at the end of the Mass, which is, you know, the Ukrainian national anthem. So there was, and also that particular church she went to was from her oblast, from her district in Ukraine. So they were like, they all had that familiar, that same history. So there was a piece of that old country that she could still cling to in some way, even though she was so far away from it, from the land of her birth.
And there is a conflict of younger and older generations in both books. Yes, and Lucia and her children specifically. In a different country, this eternal conflict, I would say, acquires some new layers. How do Lucia and her children get along? Because, yes, on the one hand, it looks like they do get along. On the other hand, Lucia gives some wise advice to her children, specifically to her daughters, when they get older and when they enter this age where they can start some relationships with partners. On the other hand, there is a lot of conflict as well, specifically between Lucia and her sons, Lucia and her brother. Uh-huh. So how do they get along, if they get along?
It's interesting. As I mentioned, I've been a family therapist for 25 years. And one of the things I discovered in my work as a therapist is a normal family has all those elements. Mm-hmm. It doesn't always get along because they're different personalities. And then you have the generation. Talk about the generation gap. It's just, as children grow old, they want to grow up, they want to find their own voice, they don't always agree with their parents. I mean, these are common themes for every family, no matter what culture you come from. And especially when you're coming into like a new country, then you've got the children who are now adapting to the new country. Mm-hmm. There's going to be even more challenging distance, I think, mm-hmm. to navigate for the parents. So yes, there's a lot of conflict, but I think to me, that's pretty universal. It just looks different in every family. Mm-hmm. Some conflict is buried, some is not spoken, and some in this particular family, in the Mazurets family, things are pretty open mm-hmm. in some ways. And Lucia does her best to understand her children. She doesn't always understand because they're all different personalities, mm-hmm. and she wants them all to sort of stay true to what she believed when she was growing up in terms of the land being important. But she discovers that a few of her sons aren't as interested in farming mm-hmm. in the land. Mm-hmm. And that's a challenge for her. That's a real conflict because mm-hmm. part of her goal in coming to Canada was to keep the family together. She wanted them to stay together. And here she finds that maybe they have different ideas. Mm-hmm. And so but again, these are conflicts that I think you see in no matter what family you're in. Mm-hmm. It looks a little different.
Yeah, and your comment reminded me of that documentary film, which we in fact watched together, Olga's Italian Diary. And there was a line by Olena Fedyuk, and there is a line there. It's very hard to be a Ukrainian mother of an Italian daughter. So and just like you said, that it's kind of universal. Yes, there are decades and decades between these two stories, but they are united by some common theme that, but to some extent, this conflict is some sort of eternal and common and universal. And I remember you also shared your story from your own experience where you couldn't quite relate to your parents and to your Baba as well.
Yes. I mean, well, I didn't appreciate, I think, their stories when I was a teenager. And I think, you know, again, knowing what I know about, you know, the different ages and stages of development, teenagers are pretty self-centered, you know. So I think I was more interested in boys and my girlfriends and studies and all of that. And so I didn't have the patience sometimes. I mean, I sat there, but it was going over my head, a lot of the stories. And it wasn't until I became a mother myself, and my mother was aging, that I decided to write those stories down. But you're right. There was a lack of appreciation, I think. So in writing these stories, I feel like I've touched, I think, a bit of the heart of my family, you know, and understanding my Baba as a woman, you know, more than just my Baba, you know, a woman in every sense, as a mother, as a daughter herself, as a grandmother, a wife, you know, and as a citizen of a country. I mean, it's so multifaceted. That's been a gift to me, Natalia, you know, writing this story. It's been a real gift to appreciate my family on so many levels, all their warts and everything. We all have them.
I'm thinking about immigration on a larger level in terms of generations and societies. Is the trauma of leaving one's country eventually forgotten? Can it be forgotten, or does it take some other societal and generational manifestations? Knowing that your family immigrated from a different country, did it somehow shape their worldviews, for example, or did it somehow establish some sort of a ground for you or for your characters as well? Those who already live in a different country, but they carry this, I don't want to say burden of leaving another country and somehow transplanting oneself from one environment to another environment. So I'm thinking about these maybe not just cultural repercussions, but psychological repercussions, emotional repercussions for the individual.
Absolutely. Yes, I think burden, I don't know. It's like there's a thread that connects you. Mm. Like even though I was not born in Ukraine at all, but I feel a very strong connection. I used to tear up when they sang the national anthem. I get shivers at my back. Even now, I'm concerned about what's happening over there. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't the country I came from. So I think, and this also made me very sympathetic to the plight of any immigrant, no matter where they come from. You know, I know in America, you know, there's that whole problem with the border. Well, I look at those poor people who are leaving, who don't want their sons to be taken up by gangs, you know, say in South America. You know, they're trying to, for their families, for the love of their families, they're making huge sacrifices, endangering their lives, trying to escape, you know, riding all these freight trains. I mean, I can't imagine. But again, they will do that for love of their family. They will make those sacrifices. So, and they will carry in their heart, I think, what is going on in their family for the rest of their life. I'm Yeah, you. I don't think you can escape that. I don't think you want to escape it. I mean, I would hope you. I would hope you wouldn't. You know, it would still be there for you because it's so rich. You know, all those memories and songs and dances and stuff that you can't replicate. You mm-hmm. just have to carry it with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you try your best to adapt. But you know, I think it's important to hold on to that.
Did you have a chance to travel to Ukraine?
Yes, I did in 1988. And that was when Gorbachev was still in power and we were limited. But we did travel to Lviv and Kiev and to Lutsk and back to the village of Kiverzi, mm-hmm. where Baba and my mother mm-hmm. Came from. And so it was wonderful, but it was also frustrating because we had to be escorted by government officials. Mm. We didn't have the freedom to go on our own. And the relatives, when they came to see us in our hotel in Lutsk, they had to hand in their passport at the front desk, and then they wouldn't even talk in the room. They were worried it was bugged. They were looking at the ceiling, looking at the floor.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was quite the experience. But at least we had a taste of it. And we went to the cemetery and to see where, my mother's father was buried, and the church there, it was wonderful, and we'd like to go back. In fact, my grandchildren want to go, and my granddaughter, I'm teaching her Ukrainian now over Zoom. She's in Toronto, but she's very interested in, mm-hmm. yes, in the language and all of that.
Mm-hmm. And could you tell us just a little bit about your third chapter, third part to this series?
Paper Roses on Stony Mountain. Well, Stony Mountain is the village behind the federal penitentiary, the Stony Mountain uh-huh. Penitentiary, where my father grew up. My father also came from Ukraine. He came from Bukovina mm-hmm. when he was 2 years old. So he came about 5 years earlier than my mother. No, more than that. He came to Canada in 1912. And he came in 1912, and my mother came in 1929. So my father was quite, anglicized, mm-hmm. although his mother didn't speak any English. His mother spoke no English, but my father and his brothers grew up in Stony Mountain. So, yeah. So anyway, it's the end of, I don't want to give anything away.
Yes, of course.
But in Lilacs in the Dust Bowl, at the end of it, there's been some issue between my mother and my father. And so in Paper Roses on Stony Mountain, it picks up where that one leaves off. So it's more about, I think, their struggles mm-hmm. and some more about Lucia
mm-hmm.
And sort of, yes.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much for giving us just a little bit of information what your upcoming novel will be about. And again, congratulations on the release of Lilacs in the Dust Bowl. Thank you for sharing your own story through these novels. And of course, thank you for narrating this story that opens up some perspectives on immigration in a particular on the stories of those Ukrainians that had to somehow find their way in a different country and abandon something essential to them. I do believe that land is something essential to a lot of Ukrainians, and to give up that kind of connection, to give up that kind of a sense of belonging to some extent, is some sort of trauma. Thank you so much, Diana.
Thank you so much for having me, Natalia. I look forward to connecting with you in the future.
I'm looking forward to reading your third part of this series. Today I spoke with Diana Steven about her book Lilacs in the Dust Bowl, which was published by Peregrine Publishing in 2021. Thank you for listening to New Books in Literary Studies, a podcast channel on the New Books Network.